Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host, and I'm in studio tonight with a very special guest star. Guest host is he's got a show on here in the morning called Sam in the Morning, and he is the founder of LA Talk Radio, Mr. Sam Hassan.
Can you believe I founded this frigging thing?
I know. What? Yeah. 10 years ago.
There you go. 9 years, actually. We're going into the 10th year now. And 9 years ago, 2008, in February, we started this radio station, and the rest is history, really. We've got some 80 shows now. Everybody loves it, and we love Jim, and we love Bobby. We love the Writer's Block.
So yeah, we do too. So there you have it.
There you go. Well, thank you for having me, Jim.
What's your name again? Sam.
I'm Sam.
Yeah.
And I'm honored to be here and looking forward to talking to your guest today. I love books. I love reading, and you know that. So
yeah, I do.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And just to let you know, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, the nice folks at Black Dog. If you're a new writer or you're trying to navigate your way through the publishing quagmire, the number there is 805-795-3165. Give them nice folks a call, and they'll be sure to help you out. And also by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall. Their web address is www.scvoutwest.com. And that's Bobby Jean Bell and her husband Jim, and they are really nice folks. And if you want anything Western, that's where you want to go. And by our constant advertiser, Target Freight Management. And since 2009, Target Freight has had full truckload service. That's the best in the industry. They go to great lengths to secure the most competitive rates possible. TFM also provides unmatched customer support from our dedicated truckload division. In an effort to streamline our customers' overall shipping efficiency, TFM provides real-time updates on all lanes. Call TFM today at 844-653-7789. Tell them you heard it here in the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, we know you are looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the right ticket for getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web, and you will not be disappointed. And they're really nice folks. If you want to call in tonight and talk to our guest, who we'll be introducing here in just a moment, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that is 818-602-4929. And our guest tonight is, he's a repeat guest. He's really, really, really a good guy and a great writer. He has written several books. He's mostly, he writes about Donovan Nash, and they are ecosystem warrior type things, people. And his stories are just really cool. They kind of mix reality in with suspense and fiction.
And I've noticed he's written several, right?
He has written several.
This is like a big series.
Right. The one we talked about last time he was on the show was Pegasus Down.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's really a good read. And this one tonight is really as good or better. And Phil Donnelly is his name, and he learned to fly at age 17 and was first published at 18. Now, how he did that, I have no clue.
Well, that's why he's here, right?
That's why he's here. In the aviation world, success came quickly, and he's been flying jets since he was 20 years old. Whether flying in Saudi chic, nighttime freight, or executives of a Fortune 500 company, Donnelly has logged over 6 million miles while spanning the globe.
Wow.
Yeah, Donnelly burst into the literary scene in 2004 with the publication of his first novel, Category 5, and it's followed by Code Black, Zero Separation, Deadly Echoes, Aftershock, and Pegasus Down. He is an avid fly fisherman and divides his time between Montana and the Pacific Northwest. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, Mr. Phil Donnelly. Philip, you with us?
I'm here, and that's got to be one of the best introductions I've had in a long time. It's good to be here.
Well, you know, I'm one of the best readers you'll ever find, so there you have it.
There you go. Well, we're still competing on that title.
Yeah, right? We are, actually. Yeah. Just, but, Sam's really good, too.
But, yeah, but as far as your subject matter and stuff, I think that's just the stuff that both Jim and I like, which is action, stuff that makes you think, you know, and, yep. And it's connected with today's headlines and everything. And I think Phil got it down pretty well.
He does, you know? He does. And this last book that you, the one was just released, Phil, it follows Pegasus Down by about, what, 4 or 5 months?
Is that not long? Yeah,
yeah.
It's almost like if Pegasus Down was another 300 pages longer, it could have been the same book.
Right. Now, it follows Donovan Nash, who is Lauren Nash's husband, or Lauren, it's not her last name, but that's her husband, who is Pegasus.
Right.
And it follows him
Dr.
on a
McKenna.
Yes, McKenna. And it follows him from the Arctic Circle in Canada, clear down into, holy crap, they go to Germany and they go England and
wow,
Iceland. And
so they go all over the place.
They're just everywhere. And they're taking this little Gulf Stream, and it's just kind of cool.
Whoa.
Why don't you give us a little bit of a synopsis on the book, Phil, if you can.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, I have been around in my career,
sure,
as a pilot. And what I like to do is if I can incorporate some of the places I've been and kind of create a sense of place that sounds like I've been there, then I think that makes for a better story. At least it makes it a little easier for me to write. So I've actually been to all the places in this book, and it starts off in the skies above northern Manitoba. And you mentioned EcoWatch, and that's the scientific organization that the book is sort of based around. It's a privately held operation, and they're monitoring the largest solar storm that has ever been recorded. And they're doing this at 37,000 feet in the clear skies over Manitoba, where they're almost hit by an airplane that's not supposed to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
That airplane is in trouble. And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I did before you go on solar storms. Tell us what those are, real quick, before you move on, because not everybody knows.
Yeah, solar storms are when they're bursts of radiation from the sun. You get a solar flare from the sun, and it just sends tons and tons of radiation into our atmosphere. Our atmosphere protects us from that for the most part, but that's when we get the northern lights, and that is just, they're beautiful. And I've seen them. Crossing the North Atlantic at night in a jet, and I've seen northern lights that I could read a newspaper by, and they're just phenomenal.
Wow.
And so I wanted to incorporate that, and that's kind of the natural disaster. I like most of my books have some sort of a natural disaster that we have to deal with, and that's kind of what usually puts my people in harm's way, is because they go out and study those things.
You mean natural disaster other than guys with guns?
Exactly. Sometimes it's volcanoes, and sometimes it's hurricanes, and sometimes it's blizzards, and sometimes it's way scarier than guys with guns.
There you go.
Yeah.
So this airplane crashes. This mysterious airplane crashes on a frozen lake, and there's a survivor. And they make the decision to go and try to rescue that person. And when Donovan finally gets to her, she's half frozen, and all she says is, "Don't let them know I'm alive. They'll kill all of us. They will kill everyone."
Right. Wow.
And that sets the book off. So
go on.
Now it's a mystery. Who is this woman? Who is in the airplane?
Right.
And his wife is over in Austria, and sure as the girl's words are true, people start coming out of the woodwork to kill everyone.
Right.
That knows that this woman is alive.
That's kind of when the caca really hits the fan, when they hit the chalet in Innsbruck.
I liked that scene. That's the first scene, because Donovan and Lauren have a daughter.
Right.
She's always
Abigail.
Been too young to really have much of a speaking
right.
role, but she does now.
Right. Yeah, that's a great scene, actually.
Thank you.
Especially her taking off across the fields on the horseback.
Well, and then it was a little hard for Lauren, because here's her six-year-old daughter giving her orders.
Exactly.
So I liked that, and I think that's a little foreshadowing to maybe some episodes in the future. But so it is pretty much nonstop, and it does start on up near the Arctic Circle, and it comes down through Minneapolis and ends up over in Europe, and all the places are places that I've been, so it was. And my books are, I like to do that. I like to check places off. In Pegasus Down, most of the book took place in Budapest,
right.
which is where I had spent a lot of time. So I think it makes, I hope it makes for a sense of place that the readers can kind of get a feel for.
Well, I mean, your storytelling is certainly good, and your descriptive abilities are phenomenal. And I found that with Pegasus Down, and I also found it with this book. And the name of this book is?
Seconds to Midnight.
There you go. And there's a reason it's called that, and it gets there about three-quarters of the way through the book, you find out why.
Okay.
You have to read the book.
To
get to the title, yeah.
There you go. No, this is, Phil, this is really cool. You know, you create characters, and then I notice you talk about them as though they're real people, you know. And this has got to feel good, because it's like giving birth not to just a book or a story, but to a whole group of people, too, characters and so forth. What's that like? I mean, did that come naturally to you?
No, I don't think anything about writing comes naturally to very many people, and I'm certainly not one of them. I didn't know, because when I first started writing, the first couple of tries I made did not involve Donovan Nash or EcoWatch, and that just didn't work. And so, being stubborn like I am, it was actually the third novel I sent to my agent that was Category 5.
Right.
And that was Donovan and Lauren and the cast of characters that have survived through, well, there's seven books so far, and I just finished number 8, and it's with my publisher right now. So what they've become is, it's part of my world. It's another world. It's like a family that I have that no one else knows.
Right. That's now, true. I'm going to assume, because I have not read Category 5, but I'm going to assume that is about a hurricane.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That was a big good there, right?
Yeah, either hurricane or tornado. I figured it was probably a hurricane. Yay for me.
Yeah. So, Phil, just to get a little perspective, where do you live these days? Where are you calling us from?
Well, this is another story. I'm in Utah right now, and I used to fly airplanes, as my bio talked about,
right.
And in 2008, I had some medical problems, and I basically retired from flying.
Oh, wow.
So I wasn't sure. I was living in Minneapolis, and I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I sold everything. I put my possessions in storage, and I grabbed my fly rod and my stuff I thought I needed to write books. And I kind of took off to maybe find a new place to live. And so 7 years later, I'm still looking. So I live in hotels. I live in houses I lease, where I places I want to live or try out, or places I want to write about. So I'm just I'm kind of a modern day hobo.
Oh, actually, no. No, not a hobo.
Not a hobo, no. Traveler. Yeah.
Traveler
Indiana
is good.
Jones.
Yeah,
you know?
Traveler. I would call you a modern-day nomad. How's that?
That's it. I've been called a lot worse than that, but that nomad works for me.
Yeah, at least you don't live in a, what is it, those tents they call Sherkas or whatever they are with the camels and the... However, I do have to tell you, Sam, the other morning when I called Phil, and I caught him at his hotel, and it was like Tuesday morning, correct me if I'm right, Phil, It was like Tuesday morning, and the first thing he says is, "Man, your timing is great. I'm just making tea in my writer's block cup.
What?
And then he sends me a picture of Force 5 and the writer's block cup.
Well,
I put up on the website for, you know, let readers or listeners know that he's going to be with us tonight.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, Phil, this is very cool. So now you obviously have a love for flying. When did you start acting on that? When did you start deciding, okay, I'm going to actually do something and get flying?
Well, my grandfather was a private pilot and a farmer out in western Kansas. I grew up in Kansas, and he took me up for my very first airplane ride when I was a little boy. It just scared the crap out of me, and I couldn't wait to do it again. And so I was just kind of hooked, you know. I just lived and breathed airplanes, and still kind of do. So it was the summer between junior and senior year in high school when I went out and I worked on the farm that summer with my grandfather and my uncle. Made enough money to actually start taking flying lessons. So you have to be 17 to be a licensed pilot. So, and that's when I did it. I was 17. I was still a senior in high school when I got my pilot's license. And in the mix of that, I had taken a journalism class in high school for the odd reason that I heard that there were more girls than guys in journalism, and that was reason enough to do that.
That was the big lie.
Damn good reason.
There were a lot more girls in that class, and I learned a lot, and some of it was about writing. So I jumped forward to my first semester in college, and I had a magazine article was the assignment in English 101, and I wrote a story about one of my flying experiences, and that was I turned the paper in to the instructor, and she gave me a B, and I was a little incensed at that point. And so being the stubborn person I am, I took that article and I submitted it to a magazine. And 5 or 6 weeks later, a check showed up in the mail, and they had published my story.
Wow!
And so that sort of started the writing thing, you know, for as a professional or semi-professional.
Yeah.
So that's kind of. But I had to make a decision at one point in college: was I going to be a pilot or was I going to be a writer, a journalist? And airplanes won, and so I went off to learn to fly and make a career of it. And it wasn't until I was in my 40s that I finally decided that maybe it was time to try to write that novel I'd promised myself I'd make someday.
Very good. Very good. So what kind of planes have you flown?
I have flown... God, I started in little Cessnas like everyone does. And then I flew... I was lucky that when I was 20 years old, I lived in Wichita, Kansas, where a lot of the airplanes are manufactured. And this gentleman came to town, and he was the chief pilot for a sheik in Saudi Arabia. And he was looking for a young, disposable co-pilot. And I couldn't raise my hand fast enough. So I was over in Saudi Arabia flying Citation jets. Came back from that, and I was flying Beech 18s and nighttime freight, and then once I got back into the jet scene, I was flying, I've flown Westwinds, I've flown Hawkers, Challengers.
Wow.
I'm captain rated on 7 different types of jets.
Yeah, and he calls himself a hobo, right? And hobos don't travel on planes like that.
Not those kind of planes.
No.
Actually, a couple of those planes actually make it into your book, too.
Well, I do try to, you know, though it's funny, Donovan's a Gulfstream guy.
Yeah.
And I've never flown Gulfstreams, but the airplane I did fly was a Canadair Challenger, and I think at some point I decided that I couldn't have the Challenger because there's a negative connotation to that after the space shuttle.
Yeah.
And so I moved it to Gulfstreams, and then I've made great friends at Gulfstream. They like it.
I'm sure they do.
Mentioned in my book.
Free advertising.
So when I have questions, they give me full access. It's they've been great.
Wow. Now who gave you the information on flying a 212? That's a Bell helicopter.
Okay.
I had a friend. Actually, I worked with him, and he was dual rated. And so we flew airplanes. He could fly a helicopter. We didn't have a helicopter, and I'm not rated, and I don't even like them a lot. But
you can tell.
He showed up one day. He called me up one day. He says, "Hey, meet me at the airport. We're going to go over to someplace." And he showed up in a Bell 47 helicopter. And then he did the age-old word flying along, and he pulls his hands off the controls, and he says, It's yours. Fly it. So I've got about a half hour of really, really frightening time in a Bell 47, and I figure if I could do that and not die, that Donovan could pull that off too.
Well, Bell 47 is a little easier to fly than a 212.
Well, I don't know.
when I was in flight school, in the Army, they actually give you like 8 acres to learn how to hover. And
okay.
this is what Donovan's trying to do. He's trying to get the airplane up and get it stable.
Yeah.
Well, I took like 15 acres, and everybody takes like between 12 and 15 acres until you figure out where the hover button is, and then you can just keep that thing stable as rock.
Wow.
But it takes about a week
to
really learn how to hover a helicopter.
It wasn't like he just jumped in it and flew it like he'd been doing it his whole life. It was kind of ugly.
Yeah, well, you know, flying helicopters is ugly anyway.
That's true, right?
It's not
pretty. But that was kind of an interesting thing because I had not planned that in the outline. That was one of those, you know, there's lots of discoveries when I write a book.
Yeah.
I set off. I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
But I don't always know quite what's going to happen in the meantime. So that was one of those kind of pleasant surprises.
Well,
when I have to tell you, that idea.
I was amazed that when you hit on, because you know pulling the battery switches, that's like the emergency shutdown,
right?
And you hit that. I thought, wow, he's at least been in the cockpit of a 212.
Never.
You know, and then somebody just says, turn off the key.
Yeah, well, that's the big secret.
Where's the key?
Big airplanes don't have keys.
Well, I have to tell you, Phil, I absolutely enjoyed the hell out of this book. And once they hit the chateau at Innsbruck, I retired last Friday. So I have all kinds of time to read, and I had your book downloaded on my Kindle on my laptop, and I just kept going. I could not stop reading that book.
Wow!
So I applaud you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
That's my
job description. My job is to keep you up past your bedtime.
Well,
that's
okay. Now you have one. now you got to get about a billion more.
Exactly.
You know, all us writers are the same. We would love for the world to read our stuff, but that's asking a whole lot.
Well, you know, I mean, you have to write. I think if you have that urge to write, you write it whether people are going to read it or not, you know.
Exactly.
It's just like with a painter, you know.
Exactly.
They paint the picture. They don't care. Is anybody going to buy it, you know.
Exactly.
That's not what art is.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So, and writing is an art. And Phil, if you don't mind me asking, what was it the first thing that your creative writer teacher told you when you hit creative writing? Or bonehead English?
You know, I got some good advice early on.
Uh-huh.
Write what you know, which I've since sort of altered is write what you're passionate about.
Right.
And be bold. I mean, if you're gonna go big or go home with writing,
right.
I think. And probably for an amateur, and I hear a lot of advice to the contrary about this, but I hear people tell amateurs to write every day.
Right.
And I don't subscribe to that.
I don't either.
It's like, you're an amateur. Do right when you're inspired.
Yeah.
Right. You know, right when it feels good. Right when you have something to say.
Right.
There's plenty of time to write every day when you're a professional.
Well, yeah. Well, so, and most professionals don't even write every day.
Right. You know, I'm kind of proud of the fact that I can take a coffee cup or a teacup that says writer's block on it.
Oh, me
set
too.
Set it down next to my keyboard and go to work.
I love that. Well, you know, I was when I first hit creative writing, I was a freshman in college, and my creative writing teacher told me one thing that always has stuck to me, and she and her first words out of her mouth were, "Write your story, your story."
Yes.
Not his story, not his story. Write your own story. Make it your way.
Exactly.
Don't worry about whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Most people are never going to read it.
That's true, right?
But there are editors and people to make stories good.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But you gotta flesh it out yourself.
You do. And it's really, and I love the way that you fleshed out your characters. And after seven novels, I mean, Donovan Nash and his wife and all these people, they jump off the page at you. They really, really, really have a life of their own.
Well, you know, I appreciate that because they kind of have, and they sort of have taken on, especially Lauren. She was particularly feisty in this book.
Yes, she was.
But when someone's trying to kill her child, I think that's an appropriate response.
I think you're absolutely right.
So I kind of had to go further than I have done. So they push me anymore, and they sort of tell me what they want, and I put them in situations, and I do kind of know. Where the boundaries are, and I think the part of the importance of that is they're good characters.
Yes, they are.
So,
and I have to tell you that the characters that I write mostly about take place in 1880s Arizona, and these guys, much like your characters, they write their own stories. All I do is like work the keyboard.
Wow, that's amazing.
They actually virtually tell their own story.
Wow.
And you never and they trick you because you think you're going to go away tell me if I'm wrong, Phil. You think you're going to go in one direction in your book and they go, "Oh no. We're going over here."
Really? So the story writes itself.
The story virtually will almost write itself.
How
only
do you
because
explain
you
that?
You know these characters so well.
Yeah.
And they're so ingrained in you.
Wow.
And I've been surprised.
Me too.
I have jumped up from the keyboard and gone, "No way."
Wow.
Well, the only problem you'll have is when they start answering you back.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So the answer from the page, you know.
So when you're writing, and we went through this before, but there's a lot of people that don't know the life of a writer. Now that you're primarily nomading it around the United States and you know, landing where your feet kind of stick to the floor. Thank you. Your process is, and I know you don't write every day, but kind of go through your process with us. Let us know, you know, kind of give us an idea of what your writing day is like. Not your average day when you're out fishing, but when you're sitting down at a keyboard and you're putting down a story.
It is there's a time of the year that I actually have to write, and my start date every year is June 1st, and that gives me plenty of time, hopefully, to write a book and turn it into my agent on time to meet my contractual requirements with my publisher.
Mm-hmm.
So my process is I try to end up in Montana somewhere. And I get up in the morning and I make tea in my
writer's block mug.
Cup.
And oh my God, this cup!
And I go. I really do use it almost every day. It's kind of sad, but
I'm going to send you another one just because I love you.
Haunt you for the
well. If I break this one, you'll hear from me.
Well, I hope so.
So I sit down and I start writing and. When I start my first draft, I'd start at the first sentence, and I never look back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever look at that until the book is done.
Uh-huh.
And I'll write 5 hours, 4 or 5 hours maybe a day, until I get to a really good place to quit. Mm-hmm. I think that's key. I think mm-hmm. Hemingway taught us all that. Quit when you know exactly what the next word is supposed to be.
Right.
And usually it's around lunchtime or a little after lunch, and so I grab a bite to eat, I grab my fly rod, I go fish, I come back, it's usually about happy hour, and I repeat all summer until there's a rough draft done.
Uh-huh. And what is for happy hour?
Pardon me?
What is for happy hour? Come on, this is the time where you want to tell the world, what is your happy hour favorite beverage?
It's the same happy hour favorite that Donovan Nash drinks.
Really? Wow.
So everyone can read the books, and
I'm
then they'll
to
know.
Remember what it is that he drinks.
Wow, that's interesting. So do you put a lot of yourself into the character?
You know, there's parts of me in all the characters. I think that's unavoidable.
Yeah.
And then I have met a lot of characters. So some of that's in there too. And so it's all kind of this amalgamated kind of concoction. But there are, I think you do have to write some of your own experiences in there, or,
sure.
or it's just, it's not real.
Right. So, oh, absolutely.
And at least your mind has to go there, you know, and that's sometimes what I wonder about people that write about. I mean, your stuff is kind of tame compared to some people that write about, like, serial killers and things like that, you know,
where
it's like really, or, you know, but really, like, disturbed individuals. And you go, this guy's mind is going there, you know. I mean, is he like this too, you know? So part of yourself.
There's some dark stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, there truly is.
You know, so I just, you know, I'd take some of that stuff. I decided early on that I wasn't going to have any or hardly any swear words in my book.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no profanity to speak of. And I've, surprisingly enough, I've gotten more comments from people that noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Because a little like I think what you're saying, you get, if someone's going to write about serial killers or whatever darkness there is out there, they're not afraid to use the whole dictionary of profanity.
That's right.
So
it's the genre.
I chose not to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your writing is very polished, you know, and the story just flows in. So let's talk maybe a little bit about pacing. You know, is that something that you feel comes naturally to you, or came naturally in the beginning, or is that something you have to constantly learn, work on? How does it work exactly for a writer?
You know, pacing for me is important. It's everything, actually. And I don't know, it was probably one of the few things I kind of got when I first started trying to write, and it is something I've tried to hone. And with the two point of views I use with Donovan and his wife Lauren,
mm-hmm.
and I just bounce back and forth between the two points of view, and it's kind of fun because I build the suspense in one point of view, and I'll leave you hanging, and I'll start with the other point of view, and we'll pick up where that left off, and it's just it's a tag team, and I actually. There's times, and I do talk to myself while I write, which is, I think that's imperative as well. But there are times when I'll finish a chapter, and I will just, out loud, I'll say, okay, readers, I dare you to turn the light out and go to sleep now.
Right, right.
And that's kind of the litmus test of whether I'm doing my job right.
That's very
cute. But pacing is important, and it's what keeps the reader going, and it keeps them coming back.
Right. I ask a lot of writers this question, and I get such varied answers. But for the most part, it's been pretty positive. When you're writing dialogue, and as you're writing the dialogue, do you stop and say it, repeat it back to yourself out loud to make sure that it works?
Not until I'm doing rewrites.
Okay.
I don't. There is a time and a place for that. And the rough draft, so much stuff changes.
Absolutely.
It's almost distracting at that point. So I just keep pushing forward. That's my process. Is I can't if I stop and start nitpicking stuff, I'll never get done.
Right.
I have to keep pushing.
But you do do that.
At the end, and it's painful because that's when it needs to be changed, and it does. But it's and I'm reading for every error, not just the dialogue. So it's that's probably one of my least favorite parts of the writing process.
I actually find myself going reading the dialogue, and I get done, and I look at the page, and I go, what in the hell did I just say?
So you have to read it out loud.
I know, you read it out loud, and you go, wait a minute, that makes absolutely no sense.
Wow, very interesting.
So then you have to go back and restructure the sentence.
Yeah, very interesting.
It's not hard.
Yeah. Wow.
So writer's block. I ask you about this before. A couple of the people who have repeated on this show have come up with different answers. So I'm going to ask you the same question, Phil. Writer's block.
Okay.
You ever get it?
No. I'll get writer. there's some other name for it. I know if I'm slowing down, writer's
fugue.
Bog down or something.
Writer's bog.
When I start bogging down, I'm thinking something's not right. The universe is trying to tell me something.
Right.
So I'm fortunate enough that I have never just gotten stuck. But I do listen. You got to listen to the universe. It's talking to you. Your subconscious is grinding on problems you don't even understand that it's working on.
Oh, sure.
And so I find out when I start slowing down, if I'm not liking something or it's not quite like I got it's time to stop and figure out what's wrong. And like your car making a rattle, you got to figure it out.
Right.
So,
right.
I pay attention to that to the point where I just, it's never when it just grinds to a halt. Mm-hmm. So happily I can say no.
Well, now see, we're going to have two answers from Phil Donnelly now. Bobby Jean is actually going to take all of these answers and put them into a book.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, yeah. And I'm thinking we can get it published through Black Dog, of course.
Yes.
And we'll send them out to some of the writers that have been on the show because they always get intrigued by some of the other answers that we get.
Yeah.
The guys that always say, no, I never get writer's block.
Yeah, it depends, I guess, I would imagine, if you write so much and stuff, it just kind of flows all the time. I think maybe it's a muscle that you use a lot, so, it's just there,
Know? Yeah. And I don't get writer's block, per se. Well, what I get is writer's fugue.
There you go.
I get sidetracked, and I'm very easily sidetracked. Of course, now I'm not so much because I don't have to think about going into work at 4 o'clock in the morning anymore.
Right.
So,
right.
So now it's I get to spend my mornings in front of my keyboard,
right,
and my monitor, and I get to put in my little thingy
and
bring up my story that I'm writing currently and do a chapter or two.
Yeah, that's many a man's dream.
It really truly is, and I'm sure that as you're pounding on the keyboard, Phil, I'm sure that you're thinking, wow, this is like very cool that I get to actually do this.
Right.
And I think most writers would tell you that.
There's parts, there's days that's true. And there's days that.
And there's days and you go, I'm just going to go ahead and have the whiskey.
It's just you
now.
Alone, right? You need somehow to get started, right? Something to get you started.
Yeah.
But the successful days are they're the best.
Yeah.
Those days when stuff magic happens or whatever, that's the best. Or you figure some stuff out.
Right. Right.
I love the brainstorming.
Right.
And, when you finally, that aha moment.
Yeah. And when you finish a chapter and you look back at it and you go, wow, that's really good.
Yeah.
Or your editor goes,
oh, crap. Now I've got to make 30 of them that are just as good.
Yeah.
So, Phil, I wanted to ask you about the story, the latest book. Obviously, planes are downed, survivors, people get killed, everything. This probably grows into an international story there, yarn. Do you have any political, social message in the book at all other than, say, the basic action and the plot and everything. Do you have something that you're trying to tell to the world beyond just the story?
You know, not really, but I think the genesis of this story is I grew up reading, like, spy thrillers where the Russians were the bad guys, right, and espionage and James Bond and Ludlum and yeah. I mean, there's just, those are the books I grew up reading. I love that. And so it's not hard for me to still imagine the Russians being the bad guys.
Right.
And I think in this book, and it was a great tool. It's not the Russian government. It's a private Russian thing going on.
Right.
And it wasn't far from, I didn't have to go very far outside the lines to dream that up. I don't think there's any message. I don't think I'm sending a message. I'm just telling a story. I think if I have an underlying message in any of my books, it's like we need to take care of our planet.
Right.
And that's kind of the marching orders of EcoWatch.
Right. And that's what I meant, you know. So you do have a position on that, and you feel we need to be really concerned about what's going on with the planet.
Exactly, that's kind of first and foremost. I'm not yelling it from the, you know, while I'm hugging a tree.
You're not an activist like that, or anything. Yeah.
No, I grew up with a hippie, and we liked our trees. You know,
we
just did, and our planet was our friend, and we needed to clean it up, and we did, and now we're kind of letting it go again.
Yeah, I hear you. So, what's next for Phil Donnelly?
Well, I finished Donovan Nash number 8, and so I'm just kind of, this is my free time. I don't have that a lot. So I'm traveling. I was just visiting with my son, and then I'm kind of working my way toward Minneapolis, where book tour starts this year in March. Mm-hmm. The new book, Seconds to Midnight, that we've been talking about, comes out March 7th.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just work my way cross country and visit people and then it's back to work, but it's the kind of work I like. It's time where I finally get to go out and meet readers and talk to them face to face, and I like that.
Well, you know, you're always welcome here in L.A., and if you ever get it to L.A. and you want to come on the show live, we can make room for you.
Well, I appreciate it.
We would love to have you in the studio, because I mean, I'd love to pick on you in person.
Maybe my enthusiasm just dimmed a little bit.
No worries. We don't pick on anybody.
I know. You guys are great.
Yeah. What is your website?
It is www.philip with one L. Donnelly, which is donlay.com.
Okay. And your email address, of course, is phil@philipdonnelly.com. And your Facebook?
I don't know.
Yeah, I bet you if you just look it up, just go on Google, it'll bring up everything. You know, go to
the
website.
I have to look stuff up. I'm older now.
That's
so
okay.
It is,
oh, you're not that.
There
old.
Is a there's Facebook, and then there's Twitter. Is there?
I don't do Twitter.
The website, Facebook's the best, or the website. I answer all that stuff. I see everything that comes in. So, Facebook is author Philip Donnelly.
Okay.
Sounds good enough.
Now, you mentioned a book show that's going to be coming up. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
There's a
Minneapolis
in the book tour.
Yeah, book tour.
There's, God, you know, Minneapolis has been so good to me. My first two books were published there when I was still flying. I was doing both. Uh-huh. And what a great town and a great writer community. I was coached early on by people like Vince Lynn and Wayne Kid Kruger and John Sanford. So I always go to Minneapolis. And so I probably, the tour schedule will be up probably by the end of next week.
Mm-hmm.
And there's multiple appearances in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and I think we're trying to reach over into Chicago this year.
Oh, wow, well, good for you.
Yeah, Mr. Midwest there, you know. Sounds cool.
Nice.
And then later,
country.
Later in the year, maybe back out to the Pacific Northwest as I kind of migrate.
Sounds good. Well, it sounds like you get around, and that's a good thing to do. You know,
it still lets me do that. You know, I miss the flying. Yeah. I don't fly anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But you travel, and that's a nice thing. You know, I mean, not everybody gets to do that. And you obviously, and so you said you're in Budapest a lot?
I was.
Oh, wow. Wow, very interesting. Well, we'll leave that for another show.
Yeah,
huh,
we're running out of time here, so.
Uh-oh.
That's okay. We have a couple minutes left, but I do want to go through a couple things that announcements I have to make. So I'm going to say thank you so much for joining us tonight, Phil.
And it's been my pleasure.
It's always our pleasure to have you on the show, and you're always welcome back as soon as your other new book that's at your agents now. You get that moving on, let us know, and we'll get you rebooked.
Yes, Phil, and keep on coming with the new books. You obviously have the talent for it. You have the love for it. And as long as you got stories to tell, we'll be reading.
Keep telling them, and we'll keep reading. That's exactly right.
There you go.
And, Phil, thanks so much for agreeing to come back on the air with us tonight, even though I know we're a pain in the ass.
Why?
No, it's great. It's great fun. It always is.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. We have a good time here. Yeah. And it was really kind of cool having Sam on board tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It was nice to meet you, Phil.
Yeah, there you go. So you get to meet somebody new.
Yes.
All right, Philip, we're going to take off.
Okay. Take care.
Take care, my friend. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Phil Donnelly.
Yes.
Nice guy.
Very nice guy. Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing is that what you do on your show is you have actually a guest on for the whole show.
Yeah.
When I have a guest the entire time, it's usually in the studio.
Right.
When I have remote guests, it's like 15 minutes or so because we have other things to do on the show.
Right.
Our show is different than yours.
Yes, it is.
So... So here it's nice because you actually get to know a little bit more about the writer than just the book and the quick things. You really take your time on it.
Well, we try to. And that's the whole idea behind the show. And that's what we told you when we put this thing together is that we want to give them as much time in the air as we can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because these guys are used to the 5-7 minute interviews with DJs who don't even read their book.
Exactly.
You know, and you go, ugh.
No, but you take your time. You read every book.
Yeah, I do. And you know, it's they really like that. They like the fact that you actually read their stuff.
Yeah, and not only that, but then you know what you're talking about, and you really want to know the author.
Right.
Once you read a book and you like it, you really want to talk to the author.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And let me just give you a little bit of announcement here that April 22nd, 23rd is the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival, which I will be at the Buckaroo Bookshop.
Ah.
And Bobby Jean and Jim Bell will be there, and it's a consolidated effort. We do have a stage this year. We'll be doing interviews on the stage. It's just going to be – it's so much fun. Richard Polinelli, who's been a guest on the show – oh God, what's his name? Oh, forgive me. I just had a brain fart.
Russ?
No, Russ won't be there.
Okay.
No, Russ won't be there.
Okay.
J.R. Sanders, John Williams, Eric Heisner, all of them have been guests on this show.
Okay.
And they'll all be there. And it's a great 2-day venue. And if you're interested in meeting authors of a Western genre, that's the place to go. The Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. It's at Hart Park, April 22nd and 23rd, from 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m.
Yeah. Tell me something. Do they have hot cowgirls there and stuff, too?
Well, yeah.
Okay, then I'm coming.
And they have peach cobbler.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Then I'm coming. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Give me some cowgirls, man. You know, I've been watching Westworld. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Westworld's a good show.
Yeah, so I've been watching that, and I'm sort of like into Westerns now.
But it's done for the season.
Yeah, I know. But I'm at the last episode now, so catching up on it.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, one more thing before we go. Why? Where did the name Black Dog Publishing come from?
Black Dog Publishing came from my Rottweiler.
Okay.
When I had my Rottweiler, I had her from the time she was a year and 2 months, year and 3 months, till she died when she was 11.
I see.
And that's what her nickname was, Black Dog.
Oh, okay.
And I just couldn't let her memory go.
Yeah.
So when we put together the company.
But that's awesome.
Yeah, we put together as Black Dog Publishing.
That's awesome.
And it caught on.
So yeah, yeah. But you know that Churchill called the Black Dog his depression.
Yeah.
He was a depressed man, and he called it the Black Dog. It's constantly there, you know. But obviously here the meaning is totally different.
Right.
It has a meaning to you.
Right.
And it has a meaning to the readers and everything. Now we know. Now we
actually, the logo is a Rottweiler.
A Rottweiler.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
Well,
it makes sense.
She was my baby.
If she was a Rottweiler, then the logo should definitely be a Rottweiler.
There you go.
And not just a bulldog or a chihuahua, you know?
There you go.
There you go. Jim, thanks for having me, man.
Oh, Sam, it's great having you on the show. And I want to thank all of our listeners for listening in. And we'll be here next Thursday when we showcase Jody Smith, who has written a book called The Woods at Barlow Bend. And it's a story that her grandmother told her, and she did it for a class. So it's actually a really good book. I'm right in the middle of it now. So that being said, thank you so much for joining me, Sam. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
Another Thursday. We'll be back next Thursday right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hallelujah.